League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The lone run, Guyer loses a ball in the lights at the end, and they end up converting that run, makes it harder to win. You're on the road to begin with. You know, there's just no wiggle room. As we found out early on, we scored the one, but we didn't convert the other one. And, you know, you'd like to think you're going to have more opportunities, but on this trip, it's been pretty hard for us to score. Keep fighting. We just got to keep grinding. Sometimes, you know, teams go through periods like this. We just got to figure out a way to win 2-1 as opposed to losing 2-1.
Frazier's going to help in terms of playing first and third base, where the Yankees have had very little production all season long. That will help no matter what. But the bigger key to this is the two bullpen pieces, because what the Yankees are doing is the trade market for starting pitchers is not that great this year. Didn't have great starting pitching, but they had that lockdown bullpen. They suddenly have, of the top 100 prospects in all of baseball, they have 10. Which is unheard of. And none of them, by the way, is 24 years old. And when they traded Chris Sale last offseason, they started down this path, and general manager Rick Hahn has not stopped. Don't be surprised if we see the White Sox in about 2 years, maybe three, be one of the best teams in all of baseball. Ready?
You know, it's definitely hard. You know, and Al told me it's kind of one of those things. It's like you knew it was happening. You knew it was going to happen. You know, you really don't know how you're going to feel. It doesn't really hit you till they tell you. I love this team. I love this organization. You know, I love the fans. I love everything in Detroit. You know, that's home for me. They were the organization that believed in me when everyone else passed. They were the ones that gave me the opportunity when everyone else didn't. And I wish it could have been different. I wish we would have came out. We would have been hot. We've been in first place right now. And all of a sudden, you know, we're in a playoff run here. God's got other plans. And, you know, that's where he wants me, so take it for what it is and be excited. You know, I'm joining another good organization in Arizona. You know, just got to go out there and help them win.
Well, it's tough to see a person and a player like JD go. He kind of came into his own as a Detroit Tiger, and he even said it kind of that it felt like home to him. Truthfully, forced his way into the lineup. From that point on, he's been an all-star caliber player, one of the best right-hand hitting bats in the game. You know, unfortunately, the business of the game and him becoming a free agent made it a tough call, but, you know, probably a prudent call in the long run.
Well, obviously, it breaks my heart. I love JD. We have a long relationship. You know, he's almost like a son to me. I know the family well. And so, obviously, these things are never easy. At the end of the day, it's the best thing for the organization. Well, and Lugo, playing Double-A right now, a lot of high accolades. We feel we have an everyday third baseman that can play really good defense and hit really well. And we feel there's some power coming. So we feel we have a very good player. With Alcantara, the shortstop, he's a very good defensive player, very athletic, switch hitter. And then with King, who's the furthest guy, he's a very young kid, 18 years old, and rookie ball still. The reason we went that low, and he's more of a higher risk guy, but he's also a high reward type of guy because tremendous tools, tremendous work ethic, and we feel he's got high upside. He's also a shortstop.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to a very, very packed full extravaganza this afternoon right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are indeed Toledo's sports leader. Yeah, the first shoe has dropped. When will the next one come for the Detroit Tigers? J.D. Martinez, arguably their best hitter, and I know that's hard to say with Miguel Cabrera in the lineup and on the roster, but this year, J.D. Martinez, probably their best hitter, is now one of the best hitters for the Arizona Diamondbacks. How does it make you feel now that it's official? If you're a Tigers fan, how does it make you feel now that it's official that you are in full rebuild mode? Make no mistake about it. That's what this signifies. And I know nobody really wanted to admit that. I can tell you, Al Avila didn't want to admit that. Al Avila didn't want to make that happen. I mean, he's still, to this moment, you know, I mean, you know, how are we here? How did we get here? What the heck? This wasn't planned. This wasn't intended. This wasn't acceptable. They had fully expected to win this season. And I tell you what, quite frankly, you know, a lot of other people around baseball expected them to win this season. Now, does that mean they were expected to beat the Indians, who won the American League Central and the American League a year ago? Maybe not. Were they expected to be in this race, competitive for a wild card spot? Yeah. I think most people would agree with that. And Al Avila, in announcing the trade, said, we don't like this idea, but essentially this is exactly what the situation dictates. We can't just stick our head in the sand and say, well, it's a good roster. Maybe they'll play better next year. We don't need to rebuild the farm system. It's not a good enough roster. It should be on paper. And when you look at some of the names of JD and Miguel Cabrera and Upton and Victor Martinez and Ian Kinsler and on down the line and Alex Avila, maybe it should be a lot better than it is. Even the pitching. You know, it's not awful in the starting rotation. What's that, Jimmy? Yeah, it's not awful in the starting rotation. The bullpen, another story, but still. This is something they did not want to admit that they had to do. But Al Avila finally has indeed acknowledged this needed to be done. They cannot continue to pay guys the kind of money that they are. No more $150 million contracts, all that sort of thing. There's no doubt about it. This is the first step of several that need to be taken. JD is on the way out. How long will Wilson last? How long will Verlander, and his little more difficult story there, how long will he last? Will Kinsler be on the move, and what else does Avila have up his sleeve? And, of course, the biggest news or the biggest question when you talk about a trade involving a player of J.D. Martinez's caliber is, did they get enough in return? Joining us now to talk a little bit about this is our old friend Anthony Fenech of the Detroit Free Press, who, of course, is on the Tigers beat. Anthony, it's been far too long, my friend. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Hello, Bob. How are you?
I'm all right, man. Just kind of watching all of the action take place. And, you know, Al Avila said something to the effect of, when announcing this, that they didn't expect to have to do this. He doesn't like having to do this. They really, really, truly in that organization believed they'd win. Now, I don't know what win means. Does that mean, you know, win a division or compete for a division in a wild card spot? But they felt like this roster was good enough to compete and win. And now here they sit, you know, just, about 11, 12 days before the trading deadline, and they have come to the realization this team cannot win as it's currently comprised. And away they go. The fire sale, if you will, is on. What is your reaction to Al Avila's commentary?
Not surprising at all. I think we saw the writing on the wall beginning in early May when they really struggled on the West Coast trip. And then there was another struggle late in June. They, you know, lost seven straight games. Might have even been eight. And that's really where their fate was sealed. I mean, it's just an old, slow team without a bullpen. It's not a very good team. And this was going to be, coming up here these next couple of weeks, it's going to be their big opportunity to kind of kickstart this rebuilding process after they passed on it. On it last offseason. So I'm not incredibly surprised at all. I think it was heading in this direction for quite some time. And this is something that's going to be a painful process. Let's put it that way. This isn't something you can guarantee will be over in 3 years. It's not something you can guarantee will be over in 5 years. Obviously, the sooner the better. But the Tigers are really, and Al really has his work cut out for him, because this is much more complicated than simply rebuilding. This is deconstructing a roster and then rebuilding and trying to do both at the same time, which is an extremely difficult thing to do in today's baseball climate.
Anthony Fenech joining us from the Detroit Free Press. He is, of course, the Tigers beat writer for the Free Press. If Mike Ilitch were still alive and owning this team, do you think what is happening today would be happening?
That's a good question. That's a question that actually, Bob, I haven't posed with yet. I'm not quite sure of the answer to give you. I will tell you that I think that the Tigers have known for probably 2 or 3 years that they were facing this kind of day, with the way that Justin Verlander's in his mid-30s now, Miguel Cabrera's in his mid-30s, and again, the climate of baseball is teams are winning with cost-controlled players, without doing this massive spending, and really something that it really looms large is the free spending of the 2015 offseason, when, you know, Al spent on Jordan Zimmerman and Justin Upton, Mike Pelfrey, Mark Lowe, guys like that. And that's really where they doubled down on this. And that was probably, no, definitely at the urging of Mr. Ilitch. But again, he was the owner, and that's a big part of becoming a general manager, is dealing with ownership, and he was always go, 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 going forward. Good question, though. It's one that I really can't give you an answer one way or another, but I would be inclined to say that they would be going down this same path because, look, at some point somebody would have gotten into Mr. I's ear and said, look, this is the direction we have to go, or this is going to get even worse.
Yeah, and the only reason I asked that question, of course, Anthony, is because of what you said, that really it's been kind of coming for at least 2-3 years, and it never did come because Mr. Ilitch really, really, truly wanted to get a ring or get another opportunity at a championship, while he still had time, still had time to do so. And, this day was pushed back, and eventually, you're going to come upon it, and that day is now. So this is obviously not the only move they're going to make. We'll talk about other possible moves, Anthony, but let's evaluate this one. J.D. Martinez is probably the best hitter on this team this year. That's not to say he's a better hitter, period, than Miguel Cabrera, but the way he's producing, especially since he was injured and came back. Did they get enough for him? Is the double-A prospect, Lugo, is that enough for J.D. Martinez? And your buddy Sean Windsor there at the Free Press called it Lugo and Dawa Lugo and a couple of lottery tickets. Is that how you see it as well?
A little bit, yeah. And I think they did get enough. I think it was a fine return given the situation. Look, there were not many teams. In fact, the team very just up the road from you, the Indians, according to John Paul Morosi, were one of the only teams that were really in on Martinez at the end. I think the Rockies were in on Martinez, too, according to someone that I've talked to. But this was not a robust market, and the Tigers were not going to get a premium price for J.D. Martinez just because, look, he's a two-month rental. That's what people have to realize, that he was a two-month rental. They couldn't even move him in the offseason. Teams viewed him as a rental then, so his value was even diminished. For as good as he is offensively, he's certainly taken a step back defensively over the past couple years. Can't really even say he's an average defender in the outfield. And a lot of teams with the analytical age, they really value defense, not like they have in the past. So I think that Lugo is a guy that the Tigers hope could be an everyday third baseman, maybe as early as 2020, 2019, that area. Supposed to be a plus defender with, somewhat a little bit of power, but I don't think he's eye-popping in any stretch of the imagination. Alcantara, he's a shortstop. Again, I think Sean was right on it, that he's a little bit of a lottery ticket. And the biggest lottery ticket is this guy named Jose King, who's still just 17 years old, and he's got the most upside of the bunch. But again, he's just got to the United States a short while ago. He's still learning how to speak English, but this is a guy who's got blazing fast speed, and he's a guy that's got a lot of potential. So I think when you add all three of those players together with the philosophy that Al is taking into this rebuilding process about getting faster and getting more athletic, getting younger, I think this was kind of a no-brainer deal for the Tigers. And I understand the argument about waiting a little bit longer, perhaps a week closer to the deadline, but look, the Arizona Diamondbacks are not going to allow the Tigers to take their offer and shop it around for the rest of the league. They gave their best offer. The Tigers felt it was by far their best offer, so they took it. I really don't have an issue with the trade.
Do you have any idea what the Indians were offering?
I do not.
Okay. Go ahead.
If I did, I'd be making a lot more money than I am now.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Zach Meisel later on, our mutual friend, about that next hour. So we'll see if he has any idea, because I know they were part of the conversation anyway, and I'm not sure if anything that they offered may have even driven up a little bit the prospects that Arizona was willing to give up for J.D. We're talking to Anthony Fenech, who, of course, is the Tigers beat writer for the Detroit Free Press. Anthony, your boy Jim Cushlin's got a question for you.
And looking at this, I mean, I know there might be some Tigers fans who are wondering, well, okay, is this really the best they could do? But I tend to agree with that. This is still a rental player, most likely for Arizona. But in general, we all feel that this is probably the first of a few moves over the course of this next couple weeks. So, we all call them prospects for a reason, and not here to debate that, but we've often talked, you and I and Bob and others on this show these last couple years, how overall devastated the farm system is for the Tigers. So even if guys don't pan out, how important is it that they're finally restocking some of these spots throughout the minor league system, something that's, well, quite frankly, been depleted in the various years of trying to contend?
Very important. I think one thing you're seeing from the Tigers is that even though their system is not highly ranked, it's quite frankly pretty bad, one of the worst in baseball. They still have some pitching that they believe in at the lower level, and they've really gone that direction in the draft the last couple of years. So with that being said, I think you're going to see a bigger approach at looking at position players. And they got three infielders in this. I think I would expect that whenever they do trade Justin Wilson, they'll try to get an outfielder that's close to major league ready. I think they should be able to get that. So I think it's big that they're committing to making this decision. Look, I think personally, internally, they committed to making this decision in the offseason. They just were not able to do so. They didn't have the dance partners to tangle, let's say. But now, when it's clear that this team is really going nowhere fast, I think it's the right time to at least switch the organizational philosophy.
Anthony, let's talk about other guys. Obviously, the biggest name is Verlander, even though he might not be the most attractive Justin on the trade block, and that could go to Wilson. But Verlander's got such a big number, contract number, of course. They owe him so much money. They're going to have to pay a bunch of that to somebody to take him in a deal for the right prospects. I kind of get the feeling they're not eager to do it. That, you know, even though it's a fire sale, even though it's a rebuild, you got to get rid of some of these contracts, et cetera, it just feels as though they're asking for way too much in terms of prospects, just from what I've read, and not willing to take on nearly as much of the contract to get him moved. It's almost like, yeah, he's on the market, but we really don't want to put him on the market.
To me, the intrepidation is from the other teams. I just don't think that many teams are willing to pay Justin Verlander $70 million. The number I'm hearing is kind of like Tigers would need to eat about $25, $30 million. And that's a tough sell for a franchise player like Justin Verlander, who's just a year removed from, pitching at a Cy Young caliber level. I've heard that the Tigers have been willing to eat the rest of this year's salary for Verlander, but not anymore, which again is going to be a sticking point because simply put, he's 34 years old. His stuff has diminished a little bit in the past year. And look, he's got a high 4 ERA right now, and that's not very attractive to some of the contenders. And even the teams that have the kind of prospects and have the monetary ability to pay for him, those are teams like the Astros and the Dodgers, teams that don't traditionally make these kind of moves. They're more farm system oriented. And I know the Dodgers have a mega payroll, but they have a lot of young players in their farm system, and they're very reluctant to give them up. I would not expect Justin Verlander to get traded by the deadline, but there are people within the game that think that, you know, as the days kind of dwindle down, the Tigers might be willing to take more and more of the salary just to even speed up this rebuilding process because, again, these contracts of Verlander, Miguel Cabrera, those are really big contracts that they'd like to move.
What about Justin Wilson, who's has to have become quite an attractive bullpen piece for a lot of contenders the way he's pitched? Uh-oh, we lost him. We lost him. Man overboard. Anthony Fenix's phone line just dropped. We'll see if we can reestablish that or not. I know he's busy, so we're hoping we can get him back just to talk for a couple more seconds about the prospect or the possibility of Justin Wilson being moved. Remember, this is a big piece. You know, obviously when the entire K-Rod thing exploded or imploded, perhaps, Justin Wilson settled in nicely as a closer and is really good in a variety of bullpen roles, whether it be as a setup guy or depending on the team he would go to if they already have a closer. But he would be a guy who might be able to bring some decent prospects as well. So we'll see if we can get Anthony Fenix's thoughts on that, if we are able to reestablish the connection with him. And, of course, we want your thoughts on all of this, too. Phone lines are open at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. If you're a Tigers fan, maybe you're a Hens fan, and you're watching the team closely and the prospects, and you know the holes they have at the in the depth, if you will, of the organization, the overall position players, et cetera. I mean, what did Anthony just say? It's really one of the worst in baseball in terms of the depth of the overall organization. And maybe you see that firsthand when you're watching the Hens and you're looking a little bit more closely, and they really need to do this. So do you want to see them move Justin Wilson as well? Do you think they'll move Justin Verlander? And is that it? I mean, is the moving going to be done after J.D. Martinez? I really don't know if anybody else is movable, Jim Cushlin, because Miguel Cabrera's not going anywhere. His contract is, I guess maybe Kinsler is a possibility, but the way he's played, he's not going to draw a whole lot of, a whole lot of prospects in return either.
Yeah, you're starting to see some diminishing out of Ian Kinsler, too, who not too terribly long ago was viewed as one of the best second basemen in all of baseball. And it almost mirrors a little bit of
some of the diminishing we're starting to see that Anthony was pointing out, you know, on Verlander. We've certainly commented on it, Bob, especially relative to his performances, you know, so far against the Indians this year. And I'm still wondering that, too. And I like that you phrase that, too, on the Verlander front, because as all this is going on, and this is obviously going to be continuing for the next, you know, 11, 12 days or whatever it is, Monday the 31st at 4 will be the deadline. And I get the feeling, too, that the Tigers don't necessarily want to do the Verlander move.
Yeah.
I'm getting that impression. Sure, there's going to be legitimate, well, we can't work out the money thing, how that's going to work out because it is a hefty contract. And all those things would be legitimate. But you raise an interesting, thought-provoking point that maybe there's, to a degree, they don't necessarily want to do that.
Yeah, here's the thing with Verlander to me. And maybe a little bit of both rather than one or the other. One, that maybe they don't want to move him because they don't want the fans to be upset because this is a career Tiger who's meant so much, and it's just the kind of guy you don't want to upset the fans by moving. Or number two, they recognize what Anthony was saying, that the market isn't very big for him right now.
Yeah.
In terms of the money and in terms of what prospects are willing to part with for a mid-30s guy with an ERA well over 4 this season.
Yeah.
Even though he had a great, you know, ERA last year and 254 strikeouts. And so there may be some of this that's, I don't want to say trying to avoid the embarrassment of what they would get for him right now.
Yeah.
They don't want to send him to a contender, get really, really middling prospects back, and have to pay, you know, $50 million of the contract that is owed. Because then it just looks like they threw him in the trash heap. They didn't get anything of value, and then, boy, that would look bad for Justin, and I don't think they want to do it to him. And it would really tick off the fans who are like, my God, if we're going to trade our stud, our, greatest pitcher in recent Tigers memory, if not history, if we're going to trade him, we better get a haul back.
Yeah.
And maybe they just don't see that happening, and that's why they're just, like, really lukewarm on even making him available.
Right, and that's a good theory, one that I somewhat am subscribing to, because this is where the whole point of the contract, you know, is really kicking in. If the Tigers end up taking, you know, eating less of the money, then they're going to get lesser prospects in return. That's just how it's going to work out if it works out that way.
Exactly. And you know, and
you have
no matter
to, if, you're,
how it
if
goes,
you're the Tigers, no matter what you have to eat in salary, you have to hit on whatever prospects, or at least the headliner, that you're going to get out of this deal. If it happens, you have to hit on those guys.
But you need one or the other, if not both. And that is, you know, maybe you get a prospect where you can't guarantee you're going to hit on it because it's going to be middling or lower level with great upside that he may or may not ever reach. You know
right.
how that thing goes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you move enough of the money and you don't have to pay a ton, you at least say, look, for us to rebuild, we needed to get rid of that contract.
Yeah.
And we need to get, you know, and all of this is their fault. And I don't mean to sound as brutal as it does. But these are decisions that they've made over the course of the last, you know, several seasons where they're signing guys to massive deals. Miggy's got a massive deal. Verlander's got a massive deal. I think
Upton and Zimmerman are the other two, and there's $18 million left for 1 year on Victor Martinez. Those are
Victor,
the five
there
biggest.
You go. That's my point. And they made these decisions because Mr. Ilitch, probably primarily, influenced Dombrowski and then Al Avila last year. To really believe that they can get there. And you know what? I'll pay it. I don't care. Sign them. Do what you got to do. I want to have a shot at this while I still have a chance on this earth to do so. And, you know, now it's come back to bite them. And now the description of the team, you know, I mean, it really is an aging, under-talented team that on paper, there's enough names that could make you think, wow, that's a real potential, you know, a playoff team on paper. When you just look at their names and what they have been through their careers, a lot of these guys, rather than what they are. And that's something that it's hard to admit, but, you know, maybe what they have been is not what they are. And Mr. Ilitch knew it, that there was going to come a day of reckoning, and that day of reckoning is upon the Tigers. They are over, you know, inflated. They're bloated in budget. And underwhelming in talent with very little depth in the farm system. So you're going to have to move guys that you might not want to move, including a Verlander, just to dump that salary.
Yep.
to get a little flexibility to do some things for the future, not 2 years, like Anthony said, but maybe 3 or 4 years down the road.
And this is something that we all knew was eventually, you know, coming. We thought we might have seen the first shots of it 2 Augusts ago in 2015 when Cespedes was dealt, and then you know, Dombrowski ended up leaving right after that. But it really hasn't happened, you know, that way yet. But this comes back to something that was always in the back of the minds of Tigers fans, even when they were winning, like, the 2012 pennant, for example, which is, at the end of the day, we're still the Detroit Tigers. We're not the Yankees. We're not the Red Sox. We're not the Dodgers, who could just, you know, like the Red Sox the other day, we could just wash our hands clean of Pablo Sandoval's ridiculous contract. Well, the Tigers can't do those
of
things.
They cannot do that.
And
they cannot
eventually, this day was going to come where, okay, the farm system's depleted, the roster on the field is not doing so well, and now we got to find a way to see if we could move any of these big contract pieces so we can reset the deck, especially with less in the way of contract obligations to get back into a more level ground and stop, you know, being the Detroit version of the Yankees or the Red Sox. That was done, you know, for Mike Ilitch and by Mike Ilitch to try to win a World Series. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. They only ended up winning, well, the two pennants, 06 and 12.
Yeah.
And, you know, here we are at this point, and this day was eventually going to happen. And I know it's a bummer for Tigers fans that it happened really these last couple seasons, kind of fizzling out the way the team has since they got swept by Baltimore, their last playoff run, which, goodness, feels like eons ago now, Bob. That was the 2014 playoffs. But part of the problem is, they're not the Yankees. They're not the Red Sox. They can't just cut. You know. Let's put it this way. If they were somebody like the Yankees or the Red Sox with what they can do financially, do you think Victor Martinez would still be here right now? No.
Oh,
he
goodness.
Would have been straight up cut by now, the way the Red Sox just did with Sandoval. The Tigers are one of the many organizations, though, the majority, that can't operate like that. They can't do it like that.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And there, you know, there are a lot of teams that just have that. You know, they feel like they have that spending capacity when the time is right. They're willing to open up the wallet, and Ilitch certainly has been willing to do that. But there comes a time when you've got to pay the piper. And there comes a time where you've got to say, okay, we did it, we made a run at it. And, you know, if they'd have won a championship, they might look at all this and say, hey, you know what, it's okay. I salve my hurt feelings, or I soothe my hurt feelings and salve my wounds by staring at that trophy.
Precisely.
But if it doesn't come, if you fall short, and all of that money that you spend getting those high-priced free agents, making the high or the deal for guys in terms of prospects and deadlines and summer's gone by, if you don't do it, well, now when the day of reckoning comes, it hurts a little bit more.
Yeah.
But it comes no matter what.
And saying it like this also, Bob, makes me think. Side topic for all you Tigers fans as we go forward. What are your opinions of the overall run that the Tigers attempted to have, specifically 2011 through 2014 when they won the four straight divisions, went to the one World Series? You know, now we can start almost asking that theoretical type question to Tigers fans. What are your thoughts of this? Are you going to think of these Tigers teams the way, Bob, you and I think of the mid and late 90s Indians? Are you going to just be left with a disappointing taste in your mouth? Because it is clear now, unlike 2 years ago when I mentioned that Cespedes was traded, they got Fulmer in that deal and Dombrowski left, we thought that might be the beginning of the end. They tried to hold on until now, but now it's starting to happen. So, in a way, reflection time could begin. What Tigers fans, ongoing question, what are your thoughts overall of what the Tigers did specifically between 2011 and 2014? Disappointed? Are you going to think of them highly? Again,
I'll tell you this.
Like the Indians in the mid-90s.
As a fan of one of their opponents in the Central Division, as a fan of the Indians, Jim, and you are too, I would applaud it. If I was one of them, I would say, you know what, you went for it. You didn't just, you know, tread water and not make the big deal. We're okay. We're not terrible. We're mediocre. We're in the middle. We sometimes can push for a while. They went for it. And I don't have a problem with that. As long as you know, like I said, that is going to result eventually in a whole bunch of overinflated contracts that are on the books, and you're going to have to dump them. You're going to have to move these guys. You're not going to get real quality or the top quality prospects back for them that you should later on. and you're going to have to pay the piper. The question is if you went for it and won a title, are you okay with that, looking at the Sal suffer through 4 or 5 years of rebuilding, because look what I have to keep me company, and that's this championship.
Right.
And are you willing to say, if it falls short and I don't win that championship, are you still willing to say, this was the risk that had to be taken? You know, there's two ways to say it. High risk, high reward, and that's what they did. And then a golfing term for some, depending on if you want to try to reach the green in two, no guts, no glory. If you've got the guts to go for it, knowing you could pay a heavy price later, being in the trap, being in the water, whatever the case might be, if you're willing to pay the price for that gutsy maneuver to try to win the whole damn thing, then you did the right thing. So I'm never going to apologize if I'm a Tigers fan, or not apologize. I'm never going to ask for an apology from the Tigers for trying to win a championship and going for it when you have the chance.
Yeah, and I'm kind of with you in my initial thoughts of this. And you know, again, even though and disappointing, no world championships, still won the two pennants if you count 06 as part of this. But to me, the real run is about 11 through 14. It didn't work out, but there were some fun times to be Tigers fans. Sure, a lot more fun than, say, 2003.
No question about it. All right, listen, we're going to get some phone calls going. I got some people on hold. Stay where you are. I'll get to your calls at 866-240-1065. But not before I give you a fantastic prize. I got a $100 gift certificate coming your way to Vapor's Electronic Smoke Shop on Monroe Street. Gift certificates are good through August 31st. If you would like one, hit us up at caller number what, Jim Cushlin?
Let's go number six.
Number six it is. Caller 6-866-240-1065. You'll get that $100 gift certificate, and we'll be back to take your calls as well. We're coming up right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Oh, 106.5. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Rolling on our Wii, it's 3:45. We got you until 5 o'clock. Then we go to Mike Miller, who's out once again today at Highland Meadows for the Marathon Classic. Jim Cushion, where are we going to be tomorrow?
We will be at Highland Meadows.
How about that? Round one of the Classic is tomorrow. We will be on hand broadcasting from 3 until 5 in advance of Mike Miller, who will continue his outstanding work out there. And very much looking forward to that. In fact, we'll be there for the LPG Marathon Classic on Friday. Classic. I just said classic. That's combining classic with plastic. Anyway. We'll be there on Friday as well. Very much looking forward to seeing the ladies' attire, by the way. And do you want to know why, Jim Cushion?
You got my attention.
Yeah, well, they'll get your attention if you let them. No, it's a really big story, and it's kind of a controversial one on the LPGA Tour this week, and I'm going to see what some people think about it. But new LPGA guidelines about what the ladies are allowed to wear. Not just at the Classic, but in general, because...
Yeah, this would be a tour-wide thing.
What's that?
Yeah, this would be a tour-wide thing.
Tour-wide thing, yeah. This is, you know, if you really pay attention to the attire of the ladies over the course of, you know, the last couple of years, maybe a little longer, it's getting a lot more risque for a lot of them. Plunging necklines, super high skirts, wearing no skirts over leggings, just wearing like the yoga pants, which are essentially, you know, it's your body. It's your
right.
Naked, it's your naked thighs and rear end and everything else with, you know, just the skin tight lycra over them. To say that it's a little less than professional is an understatement. It's certainly intended to ooze sex appeal. Because, you know, the ladies who are wearing it are the ones who, you know, for lack of a better way of saying it, you know, feel like they rock it, you know, those kinds of clothing. And now there's a big fight because some of the ladies on tour are saying, how dare you try to limit what we can wear? You can't body shame us like this. Nobody's saying it's body shaming. It's saying, you know, look at the guys. The guys aren't coming to the course in Speedos and, you know, tank tops or muscle shirts. They're wearing golf shirts with collars and slacks, and, you know, even if the goofy colors sometimes are a little bit odd, but they're not ultra revealing or, you know, in any way controversial. But the lady, I'm going to read some of the stories maybe in the second hour of the show, Jim, and some of the comments, because it's pretty contentious. It's pretty contentious. Like I said, there's a lot of people who are really, really mad. That they are considering, well, not considering, they have issued guidelines that say basically, you know what, let's dress professionally here. We're here to be athletes, not necessarily to be Playboy playmates. We're not here to be auditioning for the ESPN, the magazine, body, the body issue. We're here to play golf. Let's stop with this stuff, because some of it really, really is out there. So that's an interesting side note to the LPGA Tour, obviously, that we'll be covering when they're, well, they are there now, of course, at Highland Meadows, but we'll be there on Thursday and Friday for rounds one and two. Jimmy is in Toledo. Wants to talk a little bit about the Tigers, the moving of J.D. Martinez, and maybe what moves are to come. Hey, Jimmy, what's shaking, man? How are you?
Hey, what's up, brother? Listen, I have a slightly different take on Justin. I watched him since he came up, and I used to, I mean, JV was must-see TV. It was appointment television there for a good 4 or 5 years. You just never knew. I mean, it was pretty much, I don't know how many, probably a dozen times I think I've watched that guy go six innings with a no-hitter and just, you know, screw people into the ground when he was going good.
No doubt about it.
Frankly, he's had moments like this year. I mean, he had that perfect game going through, what, 5 or 6 and against the Padres, and he had 11 strikeouts in 5 innings in another. You know, so what I noticed about JV this year as opposed to last year, he's getting less swings and misses, and there's more contact. And his average velocity's right up there. So I don't think he's got a tired arm. I don't think it's because he's been an innings eater and just an absolute stud like a horse, 200 innings, you know, every year. I just think it's a case where I think over the last 3 years especially, that bullpen's killing him because they run him out there a lot of times because he's still even tired is their best opportunity often. And that seventh inning, a lot of times he goes out there and as soon as, you know, they got a leash on him. And as soon as he gets a guy on and another guy gets on perhaps, they give him the leash, and then the bullpen comes in and just unceremoniously brings the gas can, and those two runs go to Justin Verlander. So it's like, if he just held the guy out, let him go with 6 and took some pressure off of him, he might be able to go out there and have better command and just pitch his 6 innings. And I'm not trying to make excuses for him, but the fact of the matter is if 2 knuckleheads in Tampa Bay hadn't left him off the ballot last year, he'd be the defending American League Cy Young Award winner. So
yeah,
for
we
his,
we have brought that part up many times in the last month or so of the discussion about whether or not he would be dealt and whether or not he has fallen off the cliff. I personally don't think you can go from where he was last year with an ERA right at 3, 250 plus strikeouts, and suddenly not be able to get guys out this year and be, you know, dead armed or whatever. Let me ask you this, because, you know, you talk about velocity and you talk about screwing guys into the ground when he's right and so on and so forth. I don't think there's anything mechanically or physically that's terribly different about him from last year when, as you say, he could have won that Cy Young. What about mentally?
Should have.
Okay, that's fine. And a lot of people feel that way. What about mentally and emotionally? Some guys, some analysts who have played the game, believe that there's an extra gear that you can't touch until you're in the given situation, and it's a gear that really is only available when you're in a pennant race. In other words, if he was pitching for the Dodgers right now, or if he was pitching for somebody who's a first-place team and every start mattered to, you know, for playoff positioning, particularly as we get into August and September, he is going to be the same guy that was dealing last year. But when you're middling around here for the Tigers, it's you can't find that gear because the momentum, the adrenaline, the whatever you want to call it, just doesn't rise up.
If you look at his career, even the 2 years he struggled when he was, quote, down and injured, even at the end of the years, in the August and Septembers, in the dog days, he turned it up. He has that gear. He still has that gear. I'm going to tell you why, because he has
But is that gear going to show up for a team that's, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 games out as the next 2, 3 weeks roll on? That's what we're talking about, as opposed to when, you know, it matters and he needs that gear.
Yeah, I think so, because historically he's done it his entire career. And here's the thing. He's shown flashes of it most of the year. He just has a god-awful bullpen, so then he starts putting pressure on himself to be perfect. And any damn pitcher will tell you, the minute you start trying to be perfect out there, you start losing command because you're trying to do too much. And That's what's happening to Justin this year. And sometimes you just got to get back to, and then, you know, something that I've noticed over the last probably 3 to 5 years, he doesn't throw his changeup with the same amount of verve as he used to. And he does more of the slider now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. All I know is when I've seen too many outings this year where he looks just, he's Justin. He's JB. He's just, he's flaming, guys. He's throwing 97, 98.
It's there. It's just not there every 5 days. Yeah, it's just not there every 5 days as it has been in the past. You know, it's there. You see the flashes, and then you're going to see somewhere it's not there. So, I mean, I don't disagree. So, ultimately, hold on. Ultimately, Jimmy, do you expect it or not that he's moved?
Well, I hope for his sake, and as much as I hate to say this, I hope for his sake and his Hall of Fame credentials that he is.
I do, too.
Because what he's in danger of is being in a market like Trammell and Whitaker, where he had really good years, but unless you were here to watch him, you don't really realize how great he was. And he's going to sit here and he's going to wind up with 220 wins in an age where Curt Schilling couldn't even get in the Hall of Fame. He's arguably a top five pitcher of all time if you look at all the Sabre metrics. I mean, it's not even close. He's one of the greatest pitchers of all time. Go look up these articles they've written on him. His mouth kept him out of the Hall of Fame. That would never happen with Justin. I don't think he's very controversial. But I think people have written him off a little too soon. And I just think he went somewhere where he got some run support. Look him up again this year. Last year he had the worst run support. This year he's among the worst run supported. And the thing killed him this year, he's got three outings, two of which were against the Tribe, where inexplicably he just could not get out of the inning, and he gave up just crooked numbers, like 5-6 runs, and those just devastate your ERA. But worse, if he could just get to a team where when the bullpen comes in and they slam the door and you don't get an extra run every time you go out there tacked onto your ERA habitually, you'd probably have a little better ERA, and you might feel a little better about yourself and not feel like you got to go out there and pitch 7 innings every night and give up 2 runs to have a chance to win. He could really use that kind of, every pitcher could, but he could, he's really long overdue.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And by the way, I'm with you. For his Hall of Fame credentials, for all of the, and to give him a chance to win a championship, I would like to see him move too, but I also think it helps the Tigers. As painful as it is if you're a Tigers fan watching JV, and everything you said is spot on, must-see TV, you know, just such a tremendous competitor, just carving guys, blowing away guys, virtually any way you can beat a guy. He did for that stretch of about 5 years, and still very, very good a year ago. It's probably good for the Tigers because that contract is just going to be an albatross, and he will be this middle age, when I say middle age, I mean in baseball terms, in mid-30s, this middle age, player in, surrounded by a bunch of kids still in their playpens as they bring these young prospects in for the likes of JD, and who knows if Kinsler or Wilson or other guys will be moved. And it just would be not a good fit for him anyway. So let him go someplace with other veterans who are pushing for a championship. Tigers will make out in the long run. It'll suck for the short term, but it'll make out in the long run. And obviously Verlander will get another opportunity for a championship, which I think he deserves.
Well, if he goes to the National League and gets the pitch against the pitcher and doesn't have the DH, he's got since the interleague, I think he was, if he's not still, the best pitcher statistically against the other league. And just give him a shot with a decent run supporter or bullpen. I mean, he doesn't even have to have both. It's just the last several years, you could just see it on his face. He's just out there. He's gripping. He's grinding. And it just seems like the minute something goes wrong, it's just like he has to do it all. And there's just so many. It's like, what do they call it? Rod Allen calls, how many pitches do you have to make under stress? And he's great at that in the postseason and great at that. But when you're having to do it in April and May and June for a team that you know when they bring the guy out of the bullpen, the guy's going to pretty much bring a gas can with them, it's rough.
Yeah,
you know, that's why you're seeing him at 80 pitches in the fifth inning sometimes, because he's just trying to do everything.
Yeah, don't disagree with that at all. And that's a big, and that's again, that's a big thing where I talked about that gear. Those kinds of things can be impacted by where you're pitching and how, you know, the team is doing, what that bullpen looks like, how much pitching under duress you do, et cetera, et cetera. So I really think it's a good analysis. Jimmy, great to talk to you, brother. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Hey, bro. Bye.
You got it. We're going to talk more baseball coming up after the top of the hour, by the way, with our man out of Cleveland, Zach Meisel, because word is, Kush, that the Indians were in the J.D. Martinez game.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised to hear that, actually.
Yeah, I was too, and some of the guys out of Cleveland that I talked to say the Indians, it proves the Indians are not just going to try to get better or try to play better with the same guys they have that have been, you know, got them in first place by a half a game or a game, but they actually are going to try to add not only an arm, because they have no confidence in Trevor Bauer, and we'll see what happens with Danny Salazar is going to make a start for the first time since early June.
Yeah, because Kluber's got a stiff neck issue going.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be his start Friday.
Yeah, but so word out of Cleveland then, Jimmy, is that they're looking at not only that arm, but also a bat like J.D. So they're active and engaged with 12 days to go before the deadline on the 31st, and we're going to talk to Zach Meisel about it. So that was kind of interesting. Normally you don't see big-name players like J.D. traded within the division, and you didn't this time either, and it's probably because the Tigers said, if you want to take him from us, you're going to have to give us a lot so we can weaken you within the division, and it didn't work out.
If I'm a VO, I certainly tell that to a division rival. Yeah.
Oh, heck yeah. That's pretty much how you have to play it, no question about it. So we're going to talk to Zach Meisel about it. I'm also going to talk in the next hour about that LPGA dress code situation. Pretty controversial, but you know what else I'm going to tell you about is the best way to have fun, whether you're watching the Marathon Classic or whether you're watching the Conor McGregor-Floyd Mayweather fight, if you're watching Tigers or Indians baseball, if you've got parties planned, sports parties, you know you need to get your grub on from Buffalo Wild Wings. They are hooking you up. Watching games is just better in groups. So you host a watch party, got a bunch of the guys over, you call in your order from the B-Dubs party menu, or you order it directly from their new app. Download the app and then make your order right there on your couch. You can customize your order, you can save your favorites, and then just schedule the time to go pick it up. You're going to have a great time when you order from Buffalo Wild Wings. By the way, if you're looking for lunch, too, you got to take advantage of the new B-Dubs Fast Break Lunch Menu. It's all the highlights from the regular menu, but at discounted prices every Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And check out the fan favorites, by the way, that are there for a limited time, like the barbecue pork grilled cheese sandwich, which is just simply incredible. Bottom line is, if you're watching sports in a group or by yourself, you got to call B-Dubs. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. And we're back for hour number two right after this.
You know, it's definitely hard, you know, and Al told me it's kind of one of those things, it's like you knew it was happening, you knew it was going to happen, you know, you really don't know how you're going to feel. It doesn't really hit you till they tell you. I love this team, I love this organization, you know, I love the fans, I love everything in Detroit, you know, that's home for me. They were the organization that believed in me when everyone else passed. They were the ones that gave me the opportunity when everyone else didn't. You know, I wish it could have been different. I wish we would have came out, would have been hot, maybe been in first place right now, and all of a sudden, you know, we're in a playoff run here. God's got other plans, and, you know, that's where he wants me, so take it for what it is and be excited. You know, I'm joining another good organization in Arizona. You know, just got to go out there and help them win.
Well, it's tough to see a person and a player like JD go. He kind of came into his own as a Detroit Tiger, and he even said that it felt like home to him. Truthfully, forced his way into the lineup. From that point on, he's been an all-star caliber player, one of the best right-hand hitting bats in the game. You know, unfortunately, the business of the game and him becoming a free agent made it a tough call, but, you know, probably a prudent call in the long run.
Well, obviously, it breaks my heart. I love JD. We have a long relationship. You know, he's almost like a son to me. I know the family well. And so obviously these things are never easy. At the end of the day, it's the best thing for the organization. Well, and Lugo playing Double-A right now, a lot of high accolades. We feel we have an everyday third baseman that can play really good defense and hit really well. And we feel there's some power coming. So we feel we have a very good player. With Alcantara, the shortstop, he's a very good defensive player, very athletic, switch hitter. And then with King, who's the furthest guy, he's a very young kid, 18 years old, and rookie ball still. The reason we went that low, and he's more of a higher risk guy, but he's also a high reward type of guy because tremendous tools, tremendous work ethic, and we feel he's got high upside. He's also a shortstop.
Frazier's going to help in terms of playing first and third base, where the Yankees have had very little production all season long. That will help no matter what. But the bigger key to this is the two bullpen pieces, because what the Yankees are doing is the trade market for starting pitchers is not that great this year. Didn't have great starting pitching, but they had that lockdown bullpen. They suddenly have, of the top 100 prospects all of baseball, they have 10. Which is unheard of. And none of them, by the way, is 24 years old. And when they traded Chris Sale last offseason, they started down this path, and general manager Rick Hahn has not stopped. Don't be surprised if we see the White Sox in about 2 years, maybe three, be one of the best teams in all of baseball.
The long run, Guyer loses a ball in the lights at the end, and you know, they end up converting that run, makes it harder to win. You're on the road to begin with. You know, there's just no wiggle room. As we found out early on, we scored the one, but we didn't convert the other one. And, you know, you'd like to think you're going to have more opportunities, but on this trip, it's been pretty hard for us to score. Keep fighting. We just got to keep grinding. Sometimes, you know, teams go through periods like this. We just got to figure out a way to win 2-1 as opposed to losing 2-1.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
You got to be messing with me, right, Cushlin? That can't be true.
Which part?
Part about the Indians already down 1-0 to San Francisco?
Nope, not messing with you at all. It's
Why
already
1-0. Why are they sucking so badly against baseball's worst teams?
I don't know. It's.
I mean, honestly, the Padres take 2 out of 3 from them. They go to the Oakland A's and get swept there. Now the horrific Giants are up early in a rubber match of a 3-game set. This just doesn't feel
right. Yeah, in that first inning, Carlos Carrasco started the ball game, giving up a double, then a single, got an out, and then an RBI grounder.
What in the living H is going on? I mean, honestly, and you know, it's one thing in the first half of the season when some of this crap was going on, for whatever reason, it was great that they got out on the road because they were playing like this garbage at home.
Right.
But now, you know, they're out there on the left coast, and as we've talked about, what are they? They are they got swept by Oakland, so they're 1-4.
If they drop this one, they go.
This one?
Yeah, if they drop this one today, it's 1-5 on the trip.
Yeah, 1-5 trip. That's just insane. So now they're not even playing well away from Progressive Field.
More
so,
bad news.
Maybe that's why they're so busy.
Yeah.
In inquiring about potential trades to shore up the lineup and to shore up the pitching rotation as well as they try to defend their American League Central champion. Championship and, of course, their American League pennant. Joining us now out of Cleveland is our good friend Zach Mizel, who covers the Indians and more for the Northeast Ohio Media Group and the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Hey there, Zach. How are you, my man?
Doing well, Bob. How are you?
I'm frustrated. I'm very, very frustrated. And I know you are, too, and I can only imagine how frustrated Terry Francona is, and I can only imagine how frustrated the players are, but my goodness gracious, you kind of thought going into the break with a little bit of momentum, it would have been nice to sweep the Tigers, but a little bit of momentum would have gone a long way, and they come out of the break just, you know, sliding and sliding. What the hell's going on?
Think about it this way, though. If they were just playing decently well, there'd be nothing to talk about. Training camp hasn't started yet. The NBA is in its quiet period, so this at least gives us something to discuss, right?
From a talk radio standpoint, you are correct. They're giving us something to gripe about and to complain about, but also trying to make some sense out of it. Before we get into the way they are playing and how they're playing, and about, you know, I really wasn't sure what kind of a player they would be in the trade market here before July 31st, Zach. Found out really yesterday, according to a couple of different reports that I saw out of Cleveland, the Indians were players, or at least in the discussions with the Tigers, about possibly acquiring J.D. Martinez, who ended up going to Arizona, and that maybe the Indians' interest drove up the price a little bit for the Tigers, which indicates they're not only potentially looking at adding an arm, but they're looking at adding a bat, a pretty big one in the case of J.D. Martinez. What can you tell us about those conversations yesterday and how far or not far they went?
Well, so there's a lot to kind of process here. I think the first thing that we need to understand is you look at the composition of the roster, and you could make an argument that the Indians should pursue a starting pitcher. You could make the argument they should pursue an everyday hitter. And you could make the argument that they need bullpen help so that Cody Allen and Andrew Miller's arms don't fall off by October 1st. So they have, in one perspective, they have a lot of different ways they could go. In another thought, that's a lot of pressure because they have a lot of areas to patch up. So I think you're going to hear them linked to a lot of different people on the market, a lot of different areas of the roster. And the thing that they would much prefer is to have guys who are signed beyond this season. They're not really in the business for rentals, especially with pitching, because they don't have much depth at AAA. That's why Salazar's coming back, and it's couldn't have come at a better time, because Clevenger's pitched well, but they still have no clue what they're getting from Tomlin or Bauer.
No.
And now Kluber's got a stiff neck that they have to keep an eye on. So it's been such an inconsistent rotation that, yeah, it might make sense to go get a starting pitcher who signed for a couple of years, someone like Sonny Gray. But then you have to think about, okay, well, if we go and send them, if we deal a nice haul of prospects for a really good starting pitcher, are we going to have anything left to address the bullpen, to address the offense? So J.D. Martinez made sense in the fact that he was a rental. It was 2 months, and then he's going to hit the free agent market, and he's going to make a ton of money, and the Indians weren't going to pay that. So there's a lot of different dynamics here that they have to balance, and I think the one thing they can do, because they do have some depth position player-wise, Francisco Mejia, catcher, if they don't trade him, he could lend a hand next year. They have Bradley Zimmer now, so the outfield, once Chisenhall comes back healthy, the outfield is a little bit better. And you've still got Yandy Diaz at AAA, and we've seen Naquin up and down. I mean, they have some pieces offensively to where if they were going to get a rental, I think it would make more sense to do so with a position player, which is why they would be in talks with J.D. Martinez. But that just shows you, because everyone's been talking about how badly they need pitching help, guess what? They recognize they need a lot of things. And yeah, they can probably skate by and win the division even if they just tinker a little bit. And it might work in the playoffs. They might get hot at the right time like they did last year. But you always want to feel more confident. You don't want to have to just enter the postseason hoping and praying. And so they're, you know, it shows they're going to be aggressive and try to go out and make some big moves.
Okay, we're talking to Zach Meisel, who covers the Indians and more out in Cleveland. J.D. Martinez was in the discussion phase, I suppose, yesterday before he went to Arizona, as Zach just said. But how close did it come? Do you have any idea about prospects, what exactly Detroit would look for in coming back? And did they over-ask because trading a guy in the division is something that is kind of not normally done? And why did they decide to go with the Arizona deal?
I don't have specifics on what was offered. I do know the Indians, if it's going to be a rental, they're not going to give much, especially to a team in the division where they're going to have to watch that prospect face them 19 times a year.
Yep.
The one thing I do know is it's a little different. I mean, the Indians, I think they put some feelers out on Jose Quintana, but the White Sox, in that certain scenario where Quintana signed for a few years, they would want more from the Indians than maybe they got from the Cubs, and the Indians weren't going to part with Mejia and Tristan McKenzie and Bobby Bray. I mean, they would have to deplete their farm system pretty much. The Cubs were ready to do that, and they did it. But this was a little different just because Martinez is short-term, and it's a weird market. I mean, I think it's a buyer's or it's a seller's market if you've got pitching to trade, and that's why Oakland could get a ton for Sonny Gray, because Houston, they still need starting pitching help. The Yankees still need starting pitching help. The Dodgers could even use starting pitching help. So the contenders need starting pitching. Everybody does. And then there's not much out there hitting-wise. And a lot of teams, I mean, Houston doesn't need any hitting. The Yankees don't need any hitting. So it's a weird market where I just don't think, you know, in an ordinary year, the Tigers probably could have gotten a lot more for J.D. Martinez, but that just wasn't the case the way the market's set up this year.
So at the risk of asking you to repeat a tiny bit of that, you know, as you point out, there's just not a lot of hitters available, and it is a seller's market. Where would the Indians turn next, or at least some viable alternatives to guys who might be able to produce with the bat, given the limited number of them that there might be?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot out there, and like Brandon Phillips is an interesting case out in Atlanta, a 36-year-old second baseman. Jed Lowry from Oakland, maybe. But these are more patchwork-type things where they're getting someone to fill in for Kipnis or Chisenhall for a month or so and then maybe playing part-time or two out of every 3 days after that. So, I mean, you look up and down the lineup, and it's like, when healthy, this lineup should be one of the better ones in baseball. And it just hasn't produced like it should, and a lot of guys are underperforming. But because of the way it's set up, I mean, there's no obvious, okay, they definitely need a center fielder, or they need to go get a third. I mean, there's there really isn't that. And they have flexibility because Jose Ramirez can play all over the field. Eric Gonzalez can play all over the field. So, yeah, I mean, maybe they can fit an infielder or a part-time outfielder somewhere. But there just isn't the obvious glaring need offensively. They need to hit better, but I think they're going to, you know, you have to kind of rely on the guys' track records who are already here.
Talking to Zach Meisel about trading deadline possibilities and prospects with the Indians. Obviously, the Tigers have become active already. J.D. Martinez is now a Diamondback. Got a double-A second baseman caliber guy and a couple of – what did Fennec call him? Sean Windsor call him, Jimmy Cushman?
Lottery tickets.
A couple of lottery tickets as well as Lugo. So we'll see how those guys pan out. And the Indians are looking for an arm, but they are also looking for a bat, and they're just not that many to come by. Jimmy Cushion's got a question for you.
You know, and I've been thinking about this too for obviously a while, you know, especially being here in Toledo, Zach. You know, we talked a lot about the Tigers and on their end. And then when I keep thinking about the Indians, though, I keep looking at how nice they are set up contract wise. Bob, you know this one. I've mentioned many times that the only free agents the Indians have at the end of this season are Carlos Santana, Brian Shaw, and Austin Jackson, who's, of course, been on the shelf hurt. But when I think of them making a move of any kind, I really wasn't sure where they might go, partly because here's the flip side of that question. Who would get displaced? Say they pick up a bat, and we'll follow the JD thing. So say it's an outfield bat. Who exactly then gets displaced in those possible situations? Or would it be, as you mentioned, maybe you're filling in while Chisenhall, for example, is hurt, and then you go to a part-time status? How would that work out exactly? Who would possibly get displaced if they were to bring in a bat, especially if it's an outfield-type bat?
Well, I think that's what I mean, is like that's why they really have to just have the guys in-house perform the way they've performed in the past, because I don't think there's an obvious answer to that question. I think Zimmer has pretty much cemented himself as the almost everyday center fielder, and you have Brantley in left, and when Chisenhall comes back the way he was hitting, he matches with Brandon Guyer as a really good platoon in right. So there's no obvious answer. I think someone, you know, Kipnis is the one guy who, Kipnis and Santana really, who have just been behind the eight ball all season. And so if you wanted to bring in a Brandon Phillips or a Jed Lowry and they could play second base for the next few weeks, you could let Kipnis take his time to recover because he's had a few different injuries this season. You could do that. And then Kipnis comes back and you can kind of buy some time. And before you know it, it's September 1st and you've expanded rosters and it's great. You can maybe, I mean, I'm assuming if they would have traded for Martinez, he plays right field for a couple weeks while Chisenhall's out, and then when Chisenhall comes back, he plays right field part of the time. When Chisenhall's not in the lineup, he plays a little bit of first base, DH. I mean, you could find a way to get his bat in there every day, but there just aren't enough really good bats out there, and they don't have, again, the offense needs to perform better, but they don't have a desperate, obvious, glaring need to where, yeah, someone needs to be displaced. I think it's easier to say that with the bullpen, with the starting rotation.
Zach Meisel joining us, talking about the Indians' needs and potential for filling them in this trading deadline period. I talked to somebody on Monday, I think it was, just a Major League Baseball guy, wasn't team-specific, and talked about the Cubs and their quote-unquote World Series hangover and how they're not necessarily steamrolling back and fighting Milwaukee and everything else, and talked about the Indians' first place, but really I think at that time it was two games and now it's one. And I said, what is it? I mean, because the roster for both these teams is essentially intact for, you know, the World Series teams that they had a year ago. In fact, the Indians added Edwin Encarnacion, replacing Mike Napoli, and it's a really, you know, just as good, if not a better lineup with Brantley back, et cetera, Chisenhall playing better. So I said, wow, how can this be that they're so inconsistent and so underachieving, if you will, at this point in the season? And the guy said to me, baseball is really hard. And it just seemed like such a simple statement, but it's true. Baseball is so very hard to do that just because you've done something one year, to expect that somebody can replicate it or that a big number of guys can replicate it against other teams that got better as well and other pitchers and other hitters, et cetera, it's just you can't expect it on a regular basis. Unless you're the 27 Yankees and you got all-timers, you can't expect this on a regular basis. It's just that baseball's hard from year to year. You might be a really, really good team, but not play as really, really well as you did the last time around.
Yeah, it's never one thing. And I think with this team, it's about a million different things. And it's like last night was the perfect example. Mike Clevinger has been incredible over his last six starts, and he's kind of forcing his way into the rotation for good and making the Indians make some difficult decisions coming up. And yet you still can't win because the offense doesn't score against a really, really bad opponent. And then it's Andrew Miller and Cody Allen who end up losing the game. And it's like, you know, they're not even immune. It's someone different every night. It's some different reason every night. It's an error at the wrong time. It's a lack of hitting with runners in scoring position. It's this type of stuff that you can't just, you know, go into the batting cage and fix. It's just a matter of playing better. I mean, it's so simple and it's so silly, but it's like they just have to play better. I do think there might have been a case, and it's weird, because they spent all spring training talking about how last year was in the past, didn't matter, had to move on, it meant nothing. But at the same time, especially with the way they swept Texas in that first series, it was almost like you don't want to know you're good. You know, you want to have to prove it. And if you figure out that you're good in July or August, that's fine, because you've done enough to where you know how to win games. But I think they thought too early on that they were really good, and maybe that kind of not that you, because once you get in between the lines, you're not thinking about any of that. You're putting forth the best effort you can. But I do think you can kind of relax a little bit and say, it's okay that we're hovering around 500. Like, we're really good. We'll be fine. And I think they've said that all year, and you can only do that for so long. And it reminds me of a few years ago, because they used to get off to those slow starts every season, it seemed, in 2014, 2015. And it would always be, oh, we're fine. You know, we're a good team. We know we're a good team. Like, it's early. And it got early, or it got late way too quickly for them, and they could never catch up. And that's obviously different this year, because even though they've been frustrating and every facet of the roster has been perplexing in some fashion, they're still four games above 500 and in first place because it's a really weak division. So there's time to figure it out, and you kind of just want to set yourself up for October and think about how you can be the best postseason team you can be. But it's confounding. I mean, a lot of it doesn't make sense. You look at the roster and there's just so much talent and so many guys with track records, and it's just weird. It seems like it's been disjointed and it just hasn't meshed, or there's been no flow to the season. And I really do think a lot of it kind of starts with starting pitching, and that when they went on that 14-game winning streak last year, I think the starters averaged over 7 innings a start. The starter's ERA was about 1. And the bullpen never got used, and the offense knew that if it put up 3 runs, that was enough. And, you know, offenses are going to ebb and flow. Everyone's does. And the way the Indians' offense has been frustrating all season, but still, if the starting pitching was consistent and they could just rely on that first, I think that makes life easier for everybody. And so I kind of think that's been the one thing that's pushed this team into flux.
Zach, last thing, we'll let you run. We appreciate it very much. And excuse me if we already discussed this. I don't know if we've talked about it, but I've talked to some other people, Zach, about the Napoli factor. Not the bat, because Edwin Encarnacion's a better hitter all the way around, obviously, and has been for a long time, but the Napoli factor in the clubhouse, that they're just, you know, there just isn't anybody to replace what he brought. When the signs came out that said party at Napoli's, it really felt like Napoli's place. He picked the music in the clubhouse. He set the tone. He lifted guys who needed lifting. He busted chops with guys who needed busting. And everybody just really, really liked the tone of the club with him there. And there's a comfort level that's kind of not there because of that. And I don't want to make you repeat stuff if we've already discussed this, but do you believe that there's kind of a lack of real, you know, veteran leadership on that club without somebody like him there?
You know, I think they're lacking a spark. Maybe they're lacking leadership, what have you. It shouldn't matter. This team, all he said in the clubhouse, through everything you could possibly endure in a major league season.
Zach, your phone's breaking up on us, my man. I don't know if we're going to be able to salvage that or not. Zach, can you still hear us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, you faded just like your phone was dying or the signal was getting lost, as if you were going through a tunnel. Please continue.
No, I just think, I mean, it's first of all, the players have said they don't miss the leadership. Napoli was great for them last year. They could turn to him to ask questions, and it was wonderful. But from everything you could possibly go through, and known anymore. I mean, how many years do Kipnis and Brantley and Kluber and Gomes have to have in the league before people can call them leaders?
Agreed.
And so, I don't buy it at all. I also think, I mean, Napoli's had a horrendous season at the plate. So if he was still in Cleveland instead of Encarnacion or instead of Santana, I don't think people would be too happy with that. And I disagree with it. And if the players were to use that as an excuse, and they haven't, then shame on them, because you only have what you have. And someone's got to step up and be a leader at some point. And there are enough guys in that clubhouse who have been in the league for a long time, who have been through ups and downs, and at some point you just have to step up. And so I don't buy that one bit. I know a lot of fans want to use that as an excuse, but if you're using that as an excuse, that's an indictment on the players, and that's a shame.
I completely concur, and I'm so glad to hear you say that. I felt the same way, and the person I talked to about that, and I can't remember who it was a little over a week ago, but I said the exact same thing. You know, Brantley's not a kid anymore. You know, Lindor still is, kind of, but Carlos Santana's not a kid. You know, Kipnis has got a kid. They've been here. They've been down the road before, and really they ought to be able to step up and be leaders in the absence of somebody that everybody really like that. So really, really well said. Good news, by the way. How about Carlos Carrasco scores after walking? He scores on a Michael Brantley single to right, and then Jose Ramirez single to center and scored a pair, Zimmer and Brantley. So 3-1 now, the Indians back on top in the third inning in San Francisco. So just an update there. Z-Mize, thanks for talking to us during the game. I know you got to pay attention to that, so we'll let you run. But we really appreciate your insight on the trade deadline, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
You got it, guys. Thanks a lot, Bob.
Thank you, Zach. Appreciate it. Zach Meisel joining us now. It's 4:32, so what we're going to do is we're going to get a bottom-of-the-hour timeout. Hey, by the way, before we take the timeout, do you have your summer vacation plan? You know, it's midsummer. It's not over yet. And if you've got plans, you're going to love this opportunity, okay? ESPN 106.5 The Ticket and the Toledo Express Airport have this covered. Hit up 106.5theticket.com and register for a $1,000 gift certificate from American Airlines. Good toward two round-trip tickets departing from Toledo Express via Charlotte, North Carolina, and then on to anywhere in the continental U.S. From the Toledo Express Airport, the Toledo Port Authority, American Airlines, and your friends here at Toledo's ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. You can register one time at 106.5theticket.com. Good luck to you on that. And by the way, speaking of competitions, congratulations to Matt Braun of Toledo, who won the Vapors gift certificate for Vapors Electronic Smoke Shop on Monroe Street. So a couple of really great opportunities for you there, and really great conversation still to be had as we come right back on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, it is 4:39 as we roll onward, final segment of the extravaganza. Tomorrow, we are going to be live out at Highland Meadows. Why, you may ask? Well, for obvious reasons. The LPGA's Marathon Classic is back. Mike Miller will be there. In fact, he has been there all week long. He'll be there again in about 20 minutes, taking over for us. And when we're there tomorrow, we're going to talk about golf, obviously. We're going to cover it. We'll also talk more about the trading deadline for Major League Baseball. We got all of that stuff on the docket, and that's fine. But we're also going to be talking about fashion. And you may be like, wait, what? Yeah, we're going to, because we kind of have to. It's a very interesting story. The LPGA has laid down some new rules on what you can wear if you are playing in tour events, tournament events. And they have basically said that we're going to dress professionally, or you're not going to be allowed to play. And some really don't like that idea. The day after the LPGA's new stricter dress code for tour pros went into effect, one tour pro cut one of her shirts to shreds on social media to protest it. And that would be, of course, Michelle Wee, who's a bit of a rebel these days. She's got the dreads in, and she's likes to wear her skin tight tank top. With the, you know, kind of like the racer back, with the racer back bra and the super duper short skirt, and she just likes to show off her figure. It's which is okay, that's fine. But the LPGA tour heads, if you will, the administrators have basically said, yeah, not so much, not so much. We don't really need to be trying to draw people to watch our game because of our sexuality and our dressing as, let's just say, people interested in something more than golf, as if we're posing for, you know, magazines. And I think we know what type we're talking about, but we're here for a reason. We're here for golf. And so some of the new rules that caused all the backlash, I'm going to share some of this with you here if I can. The LPGA laid this out, and again, it's really only been within the last month or so.
No, it took effect Monday, so the Marathon Classic is the first tournament in the LPGA where
These were written about a month ago because they had to give the players, obviously, an opportunity, you know, to change their wardrobe or get new clothes or whatever the case
might be. Touche, I got you. Okay.
So, and some are saying that this is body-shaming the players, which doesn't make any sense, by the way. That makes no sense whatsoever to call this body-shaming. Body-shaming is usually a term reserved in today's politically correct culture for telling somebody who is overweight to cover themselves more. Don't dress that way. It's not flattering to you. You don't look good because of A, B, C, D. This isn't body-shaming at all, as far as I'm concerned. What this is more of is just the opposite. It's like, we know that you think you have a great body, and you probably do, but we're not here to show off our bodies. We're here to show off our shot making. We're not here to show off our bodies. We're here to show off our driving, our putting, our short game, etc. If anybody has ever seen Paige Renee, do you know who Paige Renee is, Kush? I'm looking at her Twitter feed. Her Twitter feed is Paige Renee. Her name is Paige Spiranak.
Okay, kinda.
She is like, trying to figure out how to say this so I can be appropriate about it. She's all right. You know what? I don't think it's an insult to call somebody gorgeous. It's not sexual harassment. If you dress showing off your body and trying to really, really highlight and accentuate your physicality for somebody to compliment your physicality. And she is extraordinarily gorgeous. She just has a smoking body, and she knows it. And she shows it. And she flaunts it. And it's her thing. And if you Google her name, you will see her on the golf course in various promotional ads, let alone in actual playing. You'll see her in the kind of attire that I'm talking about. She is one of those saying this is body shaming to tell us that we can't wear what we want to wear. In fact, I mentioned Michelle Wee a couple of moments ago. She is one of the younger players on the tour who is essentially kind of flouting all of the societal conventions when it comes to this. She wants to wear whatever she wants, whenever she wants. She's another one. She's not quite like Paige, but she's another one that fills out her clothing well and certainly likes the attention that wearing skin-tight leggings draws, likes the attention that wearing a super short skirt or skirt draws, likes the attention that she gets when she, you know, bends to pick up her ball on the green, and you can see, essentially, you know, a camera, you know, if you're watching it on TV, a camera full of butt. It's reality. So the tourists basically said, hey, we're glad that you're proud of your bodies, but that's not what we're here for. We are not here for showing off those sort of things. So here's what the LPGA Tour administrators have handed down. They're banning things like racer backs with a mock or regular collar. No, I'm sorry. Let me do that again. A racer back top is okay with a mock or a regular collar, but if you do not have a collar, no racer back. So in other words, no tank top racer back. Plunging necklines, so that when somebody is bending over to line up a shot, if the camera is there, you're not getting a face full of cleavage on TV. So no plunging necklines. Leggings are not allowed unless they're worn under a skirt or the shorts. So in other words, the skin-tight yoga pants that we have all come to see as being super popular for girls wanting to show. I mean, and let's be honest, right? These leave nothing to the imagination because you can see literally every curve, every crease in their legs and in their rear ends and other parts because they are literally second skins. That's what they are. So it just, you know, it's a different color, whether it's black or gray or red or white or whatever. It's another skin. And they're saying you can't do that without wearing a skirt or shorts over them. As far as the skirt or shorts, the length of them must be long enough to not see your bottom area. That's the phrasing in the rules. To not see your bottom area, even if covered by undershorts. In other words, you might have underwear on, But if you've got a skirt on and we can see your underwear, then you're in violation. And if we can see your underwear at any time, whether you're standing there, teeing off, or bending over to pick up the ball or to place your tee or whatever, that's a violation. Now, I don't know about you, but nothing I've read so far sounds so extraordinarily, you know, offensive or body shaming for them to say, let's not dress like this. You're not at the beach. You know, you're not at a photo shoot. You're not at a strip club. The idea here should be to play golf, not make every guy in the gallery stare at your assets. That's pretty much all they're saying. It goes on to say appropriate attire should be worn to pro-am parties. You should be dressing yourself to present a professional image. Unless otherwise told, no, golf clothes are acceptable. Dressy jeans are allowed at the parties, but cutoffs or jeans with holes are not. Workout gear or jeans, all colors, not allowed inside the ropes. Joggers are not allowed. So these are just some of the things. And, boy, to say that there is a backlash is an understatement. Paige Spiranak, the one I told you about, who's been criticized for wearing all of that revealing clothing when she plays, weighed in saying, we don't see why someone can't look professional in leggings. If anything, policing these women's bodies and clothes takes away from their professional accomplishments. And if the sport wants a positive image, body shaming is not the way to get it. You know what? That is just one of the biggest loads of crap I've ever read. Is she in Toledo? Is she at the Marathon Classic? Do you know, Jim?
I have to check. I don't know. Not sure.
I haven't seen the entire field yet, but she says, we don't see why someone can't look professional in leggings. Well, you're right if you're a professional yoga instructor, because that's what people wear in gyms like that during yoga classes. You don't look like a professional golfer in them. You look like somebody who wants people to stare at your A. You want them staring at your legs and at your rear end. That's it. Policing these women's bodies, they say, and clothes takes away from their professional accomplishments? No. Only if your professional accomplishments are wanting to look like a stripper. If your professional accomplishment is wanting to look like a professional golfer, then those clothes take away from your accomplishments with the club in your hand. You should be wanting to be acknowledged and applauded for the shot you just made, for the shot you just took, for the trophy you just won, not for the way you look in that low-cut racerback tank. That's not a professional accomplishment. And if the sport wants a positive image, she said, body shaming is not the way to get it. Nobody is body shaming. Body shaming is saying you don't have a good body. Cover yourself. This is, yeah, we know you have a good body. Let's see your golf shots. Not your upper body assets. Or your lower ones for that matter. So to me, this is really an amazing thing. And of course, there are organizations, you know, women's rights groups and, you know, the Women's March that just happened and all this other political garbage that's going on that I'm not going to get into. But they're basically saying that we should be able to wear whatever we want and look as sexy as we want because, you know, men shouldn't be objectifying us. Well, I got news for you, sweetheart. If you're going to wear that kind of clothing, you're not doing it so women stare at you. You're doing it so men do indeed stare and objectify you. So I would very much like to know how fans feel about this, especially females. If you're a female, how do you feel about women going onto the golf course and dressing to essentially show off as much of their butt cheeks as they can, show off as much of their cleavage as they can, show off the curves of their body by way of leggings as they can, all of these sorts of things, versus showing off what tremendous athletes they are, what tremendous competitors they are. To me, it diminishes your accomplishments as a golfer if you feel like the only way you're going to get attention is by showing off your physical endowments, if you will. Jim, did you check the field? Is she there?
No, I'm trying to work on that. I was what I had found was a couple of other random quotes from some couple of LPGA golfers on this. that are kind of on the other side of what you're saying. And this one's my favorite. This is a quote from one of the LPGA pros, Christina Kim. Got to double check to see if she's on the itinerary, if you will, for Marathon Classic. But I love this quote. Quote, I may sound like an old fuddy-duddy, but this is our place of business, and I think players should look professional. Do you really need ventilation for your side boob? It's not going to make your score any better.
Good for her. That's who I'm talking about. That kind of mentality. Now, that's an athlete. That's an athlete that cares about what she's there for, to play golf and not get side boob, give side book a boob peep shows to the males in the gallery. That's not what this is about. Knowing that people are probably snap. Because you know what it is, Jim. A lot of these people, especially Paige Cyrenaic, and I do not see her, by the way, on the in the field. I do not see her name in the field. I'm staring at the final field of the 2017 Marathon Classic right now. And this is as of 7-11, so I'm sure it hasn't been added. But, you know, people like her may not feel like they're long for the tour. Maybe she may not feel like this is going to be where she inevitably makes her most money, where she has her most success. Maybe she feels like her best chance of success is to go viral. And so she dresses how she dresses. She might not be able to swing the club a lick, but she dresses the way she dresses. She has tons of people snapping with their phones on silent, uploading them to their social media. Who's that? Oh, that's her. And wow, look how popular she is. Let's sign her to an endorsement deal. Look how popular she is. Let's put her on a magazine. Look how popular she is. Let's put her on a TV show. This might be, you know, just the exact opposite of athletes wanting to be athletes. These are athletes who perhaps realize that maybe they're not as good of athletes as they hope, and so they're going to look for another way to get famous.
And that could be. I mean, you know, that could be for some of them, but I definitely wanted to throw that quote out there so we don't think that the various ladies on tour are universally against
this.
That is not the case.
Of course
not. And out of the ones that are fine with it, that was just my favorite quote that I dug up.
Those kinds of opinions are very rarely universal. It's usually just the very vocal minority of people with unpopular opinions like that. Again, because what is she doing for women's sports? What are people like that? What is Teen Vogue, which is out there screaming about this? LPGA President Vicky Goetz-Ackerman, by the way, issued the new guidelines. And she's the one who's saying, look, we want people to look professional out here. Good for them. People who read things like Teen Vogue magazines, they're the ones who are screaming about this, saying, hey, we're standing up for women's rights. We're standing up for women's independence, et cetera, et cetera. Well, what exactly are you saying women are accomplishing by dressing like strippers on the golf course? All they're accomplishing is making men objectify them for their bodies and not admiring and applauding them for their play. They are the ones, a very small but loud minority of individuals who are like that, and I'm sure the vast majority. Who did you say gave us that great quote?
That quote was Christina Kim.
Christina Kim. God bless her, because I'm sure the vast majority of them feel that way rather than the ones who would rather dress like strippers. Did you say you had a second quote you wanted to give us?
No, that was my favorite one on that side of it that I dug up looking for articles explaining this.
I'm really looking forward to talking to some people tomorrow when we're at the course at Highland Meadows to see what other people think about this.
Because, and that's a good point, because, you know, even though they've obviously been trying to write these and plan this for a little bit, this Marathon Classic is the first LPGA event where this new dress code takes effect.
Yeah, right. And so that's important, obviously, to know that this is the first time they're having to deal with it, if you want to call it that. But they made the announcement obviously a while ago, and now they had to adjust to it. And here we go. So do we have time for a call, Jim? I don't know where we are. We got time for one call, because I know we got to get ready for Mike Miller, who is out there already at Highland Meadows for drive time once again. Let me talk to Eric in Toledo before we're done. Hey, Eric, thanks for joining us on the ticket. Go ahead.
Hey guys. First, I just want to say everyone should always feel comfortable with whatever clothes they're wearing. So if they feel comfortable in what they're wearing, then then people's confidence, their self-esteem feels a lot better. For me, I hate wearing shoes and socks. If I could wear flip-flops every day of the week, 24/7, I would definitely do it. But I also know there is a time and a place to wear flip-flops. Like, I'm not going to wear my flip-flops and sandals to church or to a wedding or something like that, unless it's a beach wedding. There is a time and a place to wear certain attire, and I think what makes this like a huge driving point is they're being told what they can and cannot wear that they may feel most comfortable in. Like,
well,
you're
not wrong about that, but here's the thing. Essentially, the LPG is what to them? Their employer. They set
true.
The rules. They set the rules for what they want while you're working for them. Even though you might be an independent contractor competing for prize money, you're working for them. And you might be most comfortable in flip-flops, but if you work in an accounting firm, guess what? Those flip-flops don't go with that suit that you're wearing when you're going in and meeting with clients, and they're going to tell
you right.
You must dress appropriately or you don't get to work here anymore. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Like, I work in an office building. I have to wear shirt, tie, you know, nice pants, good shoes.
Yep.
I understand. If I could, I'm telling you, if I could wear flip-flops, I would. And I feel most comfortable in lighter clothes. You know, if a woman feels more comfortable wearing her leggings or those racer back shirts, they should feel whatever's most comfortable for them.
As long as the employer says that it's okay with them. That's the point here, though. Just like you
yeah,
have
I
to
see
wear
it.
Those, just like you have to wear that shirt and tie in your office, despite liking lighter clothes, you have to wear clothes that cover up your, you know, essentially your private parts, you know, your chest and your
right.
ends, et cetera, if you're on the golf course. And that's what the bosses at the company that you work for have decided. Not
true.
You, I'm talking about them. So that's kind of where we have to leave it. Hey, Eric, got to run,
thanks,
buddy. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And I'm very much looking forward to talking about this more tomorrow when we do broadcast the Extravaganza live from the Marathon Classic at Highland Meadows. Speaking of which, that's where Mike Miller finds himself right now. He is next right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. Stay where you are for Drive Time, and we'll see you tomorrow at the class.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.